This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Take a breath, pour yourself a glass of wine. We go again next week. It's Wednesday, April 10th. I'm Adam Booker.
I'm Ollie Kirsch.
And I'm Andrew Detmer.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe.
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content, coming to you straight off the back of City's 3-3 draw at the Santiago Bernabeu in the Champions League quarterfinal this evening. Whew, gotta calm myself here. We're going live just, I don't know, 30 minutes after kickoff. I've got myself a beer to try and come down from the game a little bit. Ollie, initial thoughts after the chaotic night in Madrid?
I'm happy on balance. I tried to sum it up in as few words as I possibly could over on Twitter, which was mediocre performance, good result, four belting goals, lots of fun, and we're bringing a draw back to the Etihad. That's the top and bottom of it. We're going to get into the detail, but on balance, yeah, it was a good game. It was a fun game. My stomach's been hurting because I had the pleasure of watching it with Joe Butterfield, our very own, at the pub. I had a three-course pub meal and a pint, and within 2 minutes, I was up on my feet yelling when Bernardo put the goal in. So, yeah, all good apart from the
raging stomach. Are you going to share the three courses?
Yeah, I had chicken wings, not chicken wings, chicken tenders. I had a stacked cheeseburger with sweet potato fries and topped it off with some chocolate cake and washed it all down with a couple of pints of ale. So
that's the most American pub meal I could possibly fathom. Yeah.
To be fair, our pub meals aren't too different from their pub meals, are they?
No, but just like I was expecting at least one, like a steak and ale pie or...
No, I mean it's all on the menu, but maybe that's from spending too much time with you lot on these podcasts. But yeah, so all of that pushed together, and then getting on my feet for Bernardo's goal a couple of minutes in wasn't ideal. But no, look, I'm happy. If you say with any team in the world, challenge them to come to the Etihad on a level playing field at 0-0, effect, which is effectively what it is with the away goals rule now scrapped, which is actually quite unfortunate for us at this point. We can't complain. We come back to the fortress, and that's that.
Yeah, Andrew, I have to agree with Ollie here, but I think the general consensus, at least the way I feel, is if that were a league game, I think we'd all be fuming because there was some absolute flaws in City's performance and some moments that left some of us scratching our heads. But given the complexion of the tie now, like Ollie said, going back to the Etihad, that has become an absolute cauldron for these big European games in the past few seasons. Kind of sitting pretty, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is how we went through last year, except it was one goal to each side, both of which were kind of fluky, strange goals. And it's the same this time. I mean, we were talking, but you're talking about a combined, I think it's like just over 1.4. Yeah, like 1.46 XG for all of both teams combined. And you have six goals. That's not normal. You've got two gnarly deflections. All three of City's goals are easily classified as absolute bangers. And then Freddy Valverde's goal, just absolutely a missile that no one is going to stop. So both sides, I think, can be disappointed. I think maybe Real Madrid will be a little more disappointed, given that it was at home, given that they had an atmosphere that absolutely was there for them to help. And I think you could see that it was affecting City at multiple times. So they're probably a little more disappointed. But if you're City, I think you're at least a little disappointed that when you go up 3-2, to give up the moment that allows the third goal for Real to happen, I think it's not great. But at the end of the day, they're one of the best teams in the world. They have a heritage in this competition that they do this sort of thing all the time. But I think a City team of old in this Champions League, this ends 4-3, 5-3. Like, we don't control and see out the draw in the way that we did. And so now we can go back to the Etihad, where we won't face some of the issues we did today. And hopefully, you know, all you need is a goal and you're through.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're spot on. This is exactly what City did last season. You know, I don't think they got a single win in any away legs in the knockout rounds last season, and they won the home legs by a combined 15-1 or something like that. So it absolutely is becoming a recipe. And Ollie, it's interesting. Were it not for last season and having these big home legs and getting through in the home legs, would we feel differently about this? Would we have that same feeling that we've had in the past seasons where it's like, oh, this fucking competition, this stadium, this type of refereeing, it's another one of those years. Has last season kind of changed our outlook on this competition tenfold?
I think it's last season and maybe a year or two before that as well, because we haven't lost at the Etihad in years, isn't it, in the Champions League? We've never lost at the Etihad to Real Madrid in the Champions League. It's a culmination of a number of factors. We have that fear factor at the Etihad now, the same way that Madrid have it at the Bernabeu. You come through the Bernabeu, as you guys have just pointed out, this is the formula for the Champions League. Draw away, that's absolutely fine, and make the home ground a fortress. And that's what the Etihad is. So, yeah, in the past, would have been thinking, shit, you know, this is a bit of an issue that we're not carrying any kind of goal advantage bringing this back to the Etihad. But the way things have panned out in the last few seasons, the maturity we've shown, the ability to get the big results at home, the ability to see off these European giants, Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Inter Milan, all of this combines to what I hope is a, I don't want to say confidence, but a collective optimism amongst the City fan base. Because I'll tell you something, the Real Madrid fan base will be shitting bricks right now. They will not be happy whatsoever. They'll be looking at this. There'll be three idiots sat there on a podcast in Spanish right now, somewhere in Madrid, or wherever they are, asking these same questions. And they'll be saying, we've never won at the Etihad. We had a two-goal lead tonight. We threw it away. And now we've got to go there and we have to beat them. Or at least draw. At least draw and maybe take its penalties. That is not a pleasant position to be in. I think we are certainly the happiest set of fans. I would hope the more optimistic set of fans. And I hope the players will be feeling it too. I think, as you said, there were a lot of flaws. We'll get into them. If it was a league game, we wouldn't be happy, but it's not. And we've come through it with something now, I think, to look forward to. I'm excited for that game because I know the atmosphere is going to be phenomenal. And I think that, you know, I'm confident that the players will step up again and do what we do.
And just one quick thing to note that I think people are maybe overlooking, and part of it is it happened so quickly into the match, but Tchouameni's yellow card 30 seconds in the match means he's out for the next leg.
Camavinga should have been gone as well, by the way.
Oh, I think that you could talk about multiple Real Madrid players that should have been booked but weren't. But to me, the fact that Real Madrid is going to be missing him, they are incredibly weak at defense.
It sounds like Eder Militao might be back for the second leg because he was a potential starter tonight, at least in Ancelotti's press conferences running up to the first leg. he was kind of a game time decision. So I have a sneaking suspicion, even if it's a Aimeric Laporte-esque playing with a broken leg type performance, I think Militao might start next week. So it may actually be advantage Real Madrid with Tchouaméni going off.
I mean, except that if, sure, Militao may come on, but one, if he's not fully fit, I don't think that's the type of match you want to throw him in, begin with. In any way, but also, ideally, you bring Militao back and then you can move Tchouaméni to a different position on the pitch, and they aren't going to be able to do that. So, you know, I don't know who they, I mean, if they roll out Cruz again, like, I mean, he's still incredible, but he's old. So like I think it will affect them regardless of Militao's ability to come back, just because Tchouaméni's an incredible player. And so to not have him at all definitely is going to affect their selections.
Just talking as well about more personnel matters, rests, off the pitch, rotations, etc. We've come into this game tonight off the back of an away trip to Crystal Palace. Madrid came into it off the back of a 9-day rest. Coming into the game next week at the Etihad, City have home comforts against Luton. And
by the way, I just want to say, because I saw a lot of City fans complaining about how La Liga does all these favors for their clubs and gives them rest before Champions League ties. La Liga did not do this. The Copa del Rey final was last weekend, and unlike FA Cup weekends in Spain, they stop the league when the cup final is on. Just want to clear the air there.
And the kicker, which for next week, as I said, we're at home. We've got the home comforts for against Luton. And Real Madrid are travelling to Mallorca, which means a flight. They're over on the Balearic Islands. So it's roles reversed this time round. They've got an away trip a few days before. We're at home. Should hopefully get some good rotation in as well. We couldn't really have, no disrespect to Luton, but other than maybe Sheffield United, we couldn't have asked for a better opponent to get some rotations in. They've got to get on a plane and go over to Mallorca. So let's see how they cope with that. We've got to consider it's more than just the case of turning up at the Bernabeu and getting 3-3. We've turned up at the Bernabeu, come away with a 3-3 draw off the back of Madrid having a rest, City having an away fixture. It's great. There's so much to be happy about. There's a few things to be pissed off about tonight's performance, but I think there's a whole lot more to be happy about.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we do have to get into some of those negatives. I want to get into the nitty-gritty a bit here because, like you said, absolutely, the result and the general complexion of the tie is absolutely in City's favor at the moment. But some moments from the game, I think we have to talk about. And I want to start, Andrew, with somebody I was ragging on online for a bit during the game as the emotions were running. And that's Erling Haaland, who was a bit of a passenger in this game. And we saw in the early going, Stefan Ortega trying to go long over the top and have him win some one-on-one duels with Antonio Rudiger. He won none of them. I think the only time he won a one-on-one aerial duel, he then flipped the ball up against his own arm and lost it. So that kind of summed up his night. Is there something City can do in the second leg to get him going, get him away from Rudiger a bit? I mean, obviously he's no Phil Foden. He's no Gabriel Jesus. He's not going to drop in and be able to you know, sink into midfield and play a bigger role there. So how do they get him going in that second leg?
I don't really know, because I don't know that we've ever seen Haaland actually successfully battle with a physical center back. And like, that's not his game. His game is he wants the ball fed into him into space on the floor that he can run onto. Like, trying to have him win headers and go long, like, I don't understand that game plan. Particularly, I don't understand that game plan when it's Ortega making the passes, who is nowhere near as accurate as Ederson. And so for me, I think it's just it didn't make sense, and it often fed into Real Madrid's game plan, which is they wanted to hit us on transition. And so I would not do that the second leg. Frankly, I'm more convinced that if you want to not have the issue that's a striker as a passenger, you don't play Haaland at the Etihad. It just would be my solution.
But that, Ollie, that just doesn't, that's not going to happen, right? I mean, he's the type of player that you just play.
Yeah, I would be more inclined to drop Haaland for away matches like that rather than
home matches. I think it's worth noting, because this morning while I was eating my breakfast and having my coffee, I watched the highlights of the home leg against Real Madrid last season, and Haaland absolutely had the better of Tony Rudiger in that game. Mm-hmm. And were it not for a couple of fingertip Courtois saves, he probably could have had a first half hat trick. So
look, Haaland plays when the team plays. That's the kind of player he is. If the team is quite passive, if we're quite slow, if we're recycling possession without any real purpose, Haaland isn't going to get a sniff. If the team behind him is clicking, if we're incisive, if we're finding those final balls, there is no player in the world you want more on the end of those. Which means if you do play Alvarez and the team is clicking, everyone's sat around the fucking stadium going, what the fuck, where the hell is Haaland? Right? So it's a bit of a catch-22, but I'm partially making an excuse for Haaland. The other side is he needs to be a little bit more proactive in these kind of games and more confident in dropping a little bit deeper and getting involved in the build-up play. The second thing is he got bullied tonight, mate. He got ragdolled by Rudiger, and I wasn't expecting that. I joked that he hadn't had his Weetabix, but come on.
Perhaps the air of the opposing dressing room, the away dressing room, was drugged, was spiked.
Well, maybe that explains Kevin De Bruyne's illness. But no, he was passive. There is a bit more I want to see from him in the games where the team is passive. But this is Erling Haaland. This is what you're almost signing a deal with the devil here, that if the team's not doing well, he is not an Aguero, he is not an Alvarez, he's not going to make something happen for himself. But if you make shit happen for him, there's nobody better. So would I drop him at home? Categorically not. Sorry, Andrew. Would I consider...
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, would I consider dropping him for an away game at the Bernabeu? Absolutely. With regards to the long balls to him, agree. Didn't make sense. Does not make sense. The problem that we had was that there was space in behind at times with Madrid. When that space was in behind, we were passing backwards and recycling. Our own counter-attacks weren't quick enough. Maybe we didn't want to turn it into a basketball match. I get that. But the last thing you want to be doing is trying to pump long balls over the top from the keeper, because as Pep said, the quicker you go forward, the quicker the ball's going to come back to you. So it didn't really make sense how we were using him tonight. But as far as the whole passenger thing is concerned, that is purely because of the players that were behind him. His mood is their mood, and their mood is his mood.
And you bring up the fact that when there was chances for City to potentially be a bit more direct and hit Real Madrid on the counter, and there was open space, that they slowed it down, they went backwards. I don't think that's a surprise at all. We're used to that at this point. However, Andrew, there was times where I felt the occasion maybe got the better of the City players. I remember one instance in which I think it was a second ball that fell to Kovacic, and he had his back to the Real Madrid goal. And had he taken the ball down and turned around, he had absolute acres in front of him, and he had Foden on the right, Grealish on the left, and Haaland down the middle. And it would have been, I think, a 4-on-2 or a 4v3 counterattack. And he just lashed at the ball backwards and kicked it right back up into the air. And I wanted to ram my head through the TV in that moment, because it felt like if he had a little bit of composure, he turns, they have a counterattack, and it's easily a City goal. And I was a bit frustrated at times with some of the decision-making, because it felt like they were flip-flopping between control and composed to absolutely having the spectacle get the better of them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think there was also a moment where Bernardo got the ball in great space and was making a great run and had passes on the left or the right of him and held on to it too long, and Madrid closed him down, and that was the end of it. And I think it's a couple of things. I think it is that the tendency, and it's the correct tendency at this stadium, do not take risks. And the problem is that you still have to take some. You just have to be careful about when you pick. And I think that they didn't do a great job of that. And I think that largely came down to the emotion and the spectacle and the crowd noise. Like you could tell that they were a little affected by that. And that's not a criticism of them. I think that, you know, any team in the world would at least be partially affected. I will say that I think that some of the criticisms of how City were playing, I think, are a little bit of not recognizing that Real Madrid was doing what they wanted to do really well. It's not exactly the Arsenal and City match, because we have 6 goals, but Real Madrid was very happy to sit there defend and then try to hit us on the counter because they're incredible at that. They have better players than Arsenal to do that. And so they did it really, really well. They had moments that should have been chances that didn't get turned into it. So I think you could say that they did a better job of executing than we did. But ultimately, I think both sides were doing things they wanted to do and they were interacting with each other in a way that I think both sides probably say, I don't love how we looked.
Yeah. And all this talk of Haaland being a passenger and City being a little bit ineffective in the things they were trying to do. They did still score three goals at the Bernabeu. And just a little quirky stat for you. They've actually scored three goals in every Champions League game this season. That's now nine in a row. So they're doing something right. And a couple of those goals were absolute, as I said on Twitter, piss missiles. And we're going to talk about those goals when we get into part two. So stay right where you are.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review. We always get tons of new listeners on these big Champions League nights, so make sure you stick around for the rest of our episodes this week and next. Couple of incredible goals we got to talk about, Ali, and I mentioned that stat before going to the break. Can't complain about three goals at the Bernabeu, two of which, you know, will live long in the memory.
No, absolutely. Three goals. I think all three City goals are actually should be considered in the same category because they're all absolutely insane. Now, obviously, some people might quibble with the keeper should have done more, but I still think that that's an incredibly good
goal. You know why I left out the Bernardo goal? Because I was trying to figure out the audio delay on Paramount Plus in the first 10 minutes of the game, and I was losing my fucking mind because of it. So I don't have any memory of the first 10 minutes of the game.
I mean, a lot happened in the first 10 minutes. And actually, I think the first two goals are scored in 14, or I think first three goals are scored in 14 minutes span. And then I think it's a similar time span of when the next three are all scored. Like, this was one of those games where a lot happens, not a lot happens, and then a lot happens again. And then it kind of sometimes matches like this, like they are what you're going to remember regardless of the result, because it's the emotional highs and lows that come along with this game. And like, we score three great goals, but we gave up two stupid deflections. Like, that's just football. And it's the beauty of the game, and it's also the absolute aggravating factor of this game.
Yeah, Ali, we do have to talk about those two Madrid goals because they were absolutely infuriating. And I think if anything encapsulates City's Champions League history, particularly at the Santiago Bernabeu, it was those two deflected goals.
I think what would typify City's previous history in the Champions League if we'd left those goals unanswered. That is a City thing of the past.
Yeah, fair.
Conceding these shy, scrappy goals, deflections, maybe injustices from the officials, whatever it is, and then just kind of folding over and losing 2-1, 3-1, you know, capped off with a Valverde screamer. I think, again, that's another sign of our maturity that we can suffer some shithousery from the football gods and yet still claw our way back to a favourable result. So yeah, listen, they are what they are, as Andrew said. But you know, they're, again, from the other perspective, Madrid would be saying that about ours. I mean, ours weren't lucky, so to speak. They were three superb goals, especially Foden's and Guardiola's, which hilariously was because his first touch was so bad that the only thing he could do was swing a boot at it. But you know, that's football. There are some goals in football that you just cannot do anything about. It's not a problem about defending or goalkeeping or anything like that. That's what the three Madrid goals were. And to be honest, maybe barring our first, that's what our goals were as well. So, again, it made it all the more fun, didn't it? It was very anti-City. The whole performance and the way we scored was just so uncharacteristic for us.
That's exactly what I wanted to say, Andrew, because in years past, in basically all of the Pep Guardiola era, I think City's ultimate downfall in this competition was the fact that they wanted to win games and win ties in the perfect manner, and you just don't win things perfectly in the Champions League. Real Madrid have been proving that for decades at this point, that you can scrap through ties and get yourself all the way to a final. And I think that has been the biggest sign of City's growth in this competition, is that they don't have to find this perfect get the ball to the byline, cut it back onto the penalty spot and tap home goals at the Bernabeu anymore. They can find rockets from outside of the box. They can take a bad first touch on the edge of the box and still find the back of the net. And I think that has been one of the best things to watch about City's evolution in the Champions League, is that they're able to thrive in these games that just aren't perfect. And yeah, as much as that probably drives Pep crazy, it damn sure is fun to watch.
Yeah, and actually, Pep in his post-match comments remarked that this match, in the first four or five seasons we were together, we would have lost 4-1 or 5-1. And I think
exactly what we're saying.
Yeah, it's interesting because in many ways, not only is this performance a antithesis of a Pep Guardiola, his ideal performance, I think you actually, like, if you look at the players that are on the pitch for City in this match, Bernardo, John Stones, and that's probably it in terms, maybe not even Grealish. It's those two that you would say are like true Pep Guardiola players, right? But the rest of that lineup are actually players that, as Pep has stayed at City longer, he has evolved and changed. And like, City squad are not the, you know, small, diminutive, hyper technical, but not physical players. I mean, it is now a team of like physically strong, imposing people that seize on moments and don't just try to perfect systems. And so I think Pep has, one, realized that football has to change. And that's something I think that Pep is unique amongst some of the greatest managers, that he's had such a long career at an elite level. And it's because he has recognized that. But also, he just has realized that in the Champions League in particular, you cannot rely upon the idea that if you play perfectly, it will work out, because there are not enough games and not enough moments for that to be true. One moment of bad luck can knock the best team in the Champions League out of the tournament. And so you have to have players and have a game plan that seizes upon moments and accounts for that, rather than just says, if we're perfect, it'll work.
I just want to bring in some of Pep's quotes, because he's in fantastic form after that game. I think he must be happy, because he does this when he's happy. So we've got Toni Kroos. Oh, Toni Kroos. He controls Real Madrid in a way that only Toni Kroos can control it. We had the Bernabeu grass needs to be better. It's a bit Kloppish, that one, isn't it? Closed roof. I like seeing the sky. The stadium is impressive.
That's the most Pep one. I need to see the audio. I need to see the video of how he said that.
The stadium is impressive, but Florentino needs to fix the grass now.
Interesting.
I think just reading them off Twitter without seeing the footage, I can only guess that Pep's in a good mood. I think he's quite satisfied. That sounds like a happy Pep, because he's ribbing them a little bit there, isn't he?
Although with calling out Florentino, I can only assume that Pep must have been watching a WWE WrestleMania. And he's wanting to challenge Florentino to
a lawn mowing competition,
cage match.
I think it's a lawn mowing competition.
No, he wants to square up with Florentino, calling him by name.
If you could put Pep into a ring with anybody else in football, who would it be?
It's got to be Jose Mourinho, right?
No, it's like, because
I feel like we Pep saw won. Enough. We got enough of the Real Madrid Barca era. We got enough. Right. I want to.
Yaya Toure.
Oh God. João Cancelo.
Yeah, no, that's the one. That's the one I want to see, because they clearly hate each other.
I say I'm going to volunteer myself to go into the ring with Pep, but I'm going to fast forward the or rewind the fight all the way to the 29th of May, 2021, when he didn't start a fucking center midfielder.
Oh, not this discourse again. Right, end the episode. Cut.
Before we get out of here, I just want some leg two predictions. Obviously, we will be doing plenty of previews going into that game, so don't worry about that. But Andrew, City victory in the second leg?
Yep, and I'm going to go with 3-1.
Which I think they've won about all of their games 3-1 this season.
Hence the prediction.
Yes, perfect. Ollie?
We have precedent for it. We've played 2, 4, 6, 8. There's been 9 occasions, City in Europe since 1969, on which we have drawn the first away leg, the first tie away. And on all of those occasions, we have won the home tie in the second leg. So all optimism.
If anybody needs Oliver Kirsch's address to stone him when we lose the second leg, I will provide it for you. That'll do for us today. Andrew, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Ollie, thank you.
Gracias, mi amigo.
Until tomorrow, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.